in their way. Harbin felt just the slightest tendril of drowsiness creeping along his veins.
It would be good to get a full night's sleep, he thought, without dreams.
Aloud, he asked,
And what makes you think that there are nothing but civilians in those ships?
The exec blinked rapidly, thinking, then replied, Their manifests show,
Do you believe that if Elsnor, for example, were carrying a company of armed mercenaries, they would show it on their manifest?
She gave Harbin a strange look, but said nothing. He went on.
Why do you think that the red-bearded one is so anxious to have us search his ship?
It's an obvious trap. He must have troops there waiting to pounce on us. The exec hesitated, then finished.
That's not likely, sir.
No, not likely at all, Harbin said, grinning lopsidedly at her. You would have done well against Hannibal.
Sir?
Harbin pushed himself out of the command chair.
I'm going to my quarters for a few minutes. Call me 5 minutes before that time is up.
Yes, sir,
said the exec. Harbin knew something was wrong.
If the drug is burning out of my system, I ought to be feeling withdrawal symptoms, he thought. But I'm tired. Drowsy. Did I take the right stuff? I can't direct a battle in this condition.
Once he popped open the case that held his medications, he focused blurrily on the vials still remaining, lined up in a neat row along the inside of the lid.
Maybe I'm taking too much, he considered. Overdosing. But I can't stop now. Not until I've got Fuchs. I've got to get him.
He ran his fingertips over the smooth plastic cylinders of the medications.
Something stronger. Just for the next half hour or so. Then I can relax and get a good long sleep. But right now I need something stronger. Much stronger.
Habitat Chrysalis. Yanis Ritsos was the last of a long line of rebels and poets. Named after a famed Greek forebear, he had been born in Cyprus, lived through the deadly bio-war that racked that tortured island, survived the fallout from the nuclear devastation of Israel, and worked his way across the Mediterranean to Spain, where, like another Greek artist, he made a living for himself. Unlike El Greco, however, Yanni supported himself by running computer systems that translated languages. He even slipped some of his own poetry into the computers and had them translate his Greek into Spanish, German, and English. He was not happy with the results. He came to Ceres not as a poet, but as a rock rat. Determined to make a fortune in the asteroid belt, Yanni talked a fellow Greek businessman into allowing him to ride out to the belt and try his hand at mining. He never got farther than the Chrysalis habitat in orbit around Ceres. There he met and married the beautiful Ilona Migvicius, and instead of going out on a mining ship, remained at Ceres and took a job in the habitat's communications center. Sterile since his exposure to the nuclear fallout, totally bald for the same reason, Yanni longed to have a son and keep the family line going. He and Ilona were saving every penny they could scratch together to eventually pay for a cloning procedure. Ilona knew that bearing a cloned fetus was dangerous, but she loved Yanni so much that she was willing to risk it. So Yanis Ritsos had everything to live for when Doric Harbin's ship came to the Chrysalis habitat. He had suffered much, survived much, and endured. He felt that the future looked, if not exactly bright, at least promising. But he was wrong. And it was his own rebellious soul that put an end to his dreams.
Sir, the comtech called out. Someone aboard Elsinore is sending a message to Selene. Harbin, fresh from a new injection of stimulant, turned to his weapons technician.
Slag her antennas, he commanded. All of them.
The technician nodded and bent over his console.
Yanis Ritsos was alone on duty in Chrysalis's communications center when Harbin's ultimatum came through. It was a dull night shift, nothing but boringly routine chatter from the far-scattered ships of the miners and prospectors, and the coded telemetry sent routinely from their ships. With everything in the center humming along on automatic, and no one else in the comm center at this late hour, Yanni opened the computer subroutine he used to write poetry. He had hardly written a line when the central screen suddenly lit up to show a dark-bearded man whose eyes glittered like polished obsidian. "Attention, Chrysalis," the stranger said in guttural English. "This is the attack vessel Samarkand. You are harboring the fugitive Lars Fuchs. You will turn him over to me in 10 minutes or suffer the consequences of defiance." Annoyed at being interrupted in his writing, Yanni thought it was some jokester in the habitat pulling a prank. "Who is this?" he demanded. "Get off this frequency. It's reserved for incoming calls." The dark, bearded face grew visibly angry. "This is your own death speaking to you if you don't turn Fuchs over to me." "Lars Fuchs?" Yanni replied, only half believing his ears. "God knows where he is."
"I know where he is," the intruder snapped. "And if you don't surrender him to me, I will destroy you."
Irritated, Yanni shot back.
"Fuchs hasn't been here for years and he isn't here now. Go away and stop bothering me."
Harbin stared at the comm screen in Samarkand's bridge. "They're stalling for time," he thought. "They're trying to think of a way to hide Fuchs from me." He took a deep breath, then said with deadly calm, "Apparently you don't believe me. Very well. Let me demonstrate my sincerity." Turning to the weapons tech, Harbin ordered, "Chop one of the habitat's modules." The man swallowed hard, his Adam's apple bobbing up and down. "Sir, there are civilians in those modules. Innocent men and women."
"I gave you an order," Harbin snapped. "But get off the bridge. I'll take care of this myself."
The weapons tech glanced at the others on the bridge, looking for support.
"Chrysalis is unarmed, sir,"
said the pilot softly, almost in a whisper. Cold fury gripped Harbin.
"Get out, all of you," he said, his voice hard as ice. "I'll tend to this myself."
The entire bridge crew got up and swiftly went to the hatch, leaving Harbin alone in the command chair. He pecked furiously at the keyboards on his armrests, taking control of all the ship's systems. "Fools and weaklings," he raged to himself. "They call themselves mercenaries, but they're no good for anything except drawing their pay and pissing their pants in fear. Chrysalis is unarmed? I'll believe that when pigs fly. They're harboring Fuchs, and they're stalling for time, trying to hide him, trying to lure me into sending my crew over there so they can ambush and slaughter them. I've seen ambushes. I've seen slaughters. They're not going to do that to me or my crew."
He called up the weapons display for the main screen, focused on the module of the Chrysalis closest to his ship, and jabbed a thumb against the key that fired the lasers. 3 jagged lines slashed across the thin skin of the module. Puffs of air glittered briefly like puffs of a person's breath on a winter's day.
"Give me Fuchs," he said to the comm screen.
Yanni heard screams.
"What's going on?"
he asked the empty communications center. The face on the screen smiled coldly.
"Give me Fuchs," he said.
Before Yanni could reply, the comm center's door burst open, and a woman in bright coral coveralls rushed in.
"Module 18's been ripped apart. They're all dead in there."
Yanni gaped at her. She was from the life support crew, he could see by the color of her coveralls. But she was babbling so loud and fast that he could barely understand what she was saying.
"We're under attack," she screamed. "Call for help."
"Call who?" Yanni asked.
The executive officer stepped through the hatch into the bridge.
"Sir," she said crisply, her face a frozen expressionless mask, "I have a squad of 20 ready to board Chrysalis and search for Fuchs. They are armed with pistols and mini-grenades, perfectly capable of dealing with whatever resistance the rock rats may try to offer."
Harbin stared at her.
"Why are these fools trying to undermine me?" "I know what to do. You kill your enemies. Kill them all. Men, women, children, dogs, cattle, all and every one of them. Burn down their village.
burn their crops, blast the trees of their orchards with grenades.